Is there anything more important than taking care of yourself? Everybody knows that when you're not feeling the best, you can't be your best. Well, that's where Sambucol comes in. Sambucol makes you feel better with powerful immune support, powered by nature's super fruit, the black elderberry. There's been a handful of mornings where I've woken up feeling rubbish, and Sambucol has given me that control back by supporting my immune system and making me feel better. It's not a chore to take Sambucol either because it tastes amazing, and my personal favourite is the syrups, but the gummies are wonderful as well. It's easy to incorporate Sambucol into your wellness routine. I personally take Sambucol each morning with my breakfast. Get 15% off your next order of $9.99 or more at sambucolusa.com. Use the promo code Morbid15 for 15% off. How many free trial subscriptions end up costing you hundreds, if not thousands of dollars, long after you forget to cancel them? It's time to fight back against scammy subscriptions with Truebill. Truebill is an amazing new app to help you identify and stop paying for unwanted subscriptions. On average, people save $750 with Truebill. Companies often make it hard to cancel subscriptions, and Truebill makes it super easy. Just link your accounts and Truebill will cancel any unwanted subscriptions in just one tap. Truebill Concierge is there when you need them to cancel unwanted subscriptions, so you don't have to. For me personally, I got a Prime subscription for the holidays and completely forgot to cancel it, but Truebill had me covered. They truly do save you hassle and money, and I cannot recommend it enough. Don't fall for subscription scams. Start cancelling today at truebill.com/morbidology. Go right now to truebill.com/morbidology. It could save you thousands of dollars a year. Welcome to Morbidology. I'm your host, Emily G. Thompson, author of Unsolved Child Murders, Cults Uncovered, Mysteries Uncovered, and co-author of Unsolved Murders, True Crime Cases Uncovered. Join Morbidology on Patreon for exclusive episodes of Morbidology Plus, exclusive merch, ad-free and early release episodes, and much more. It was September of 2005 when a man came running up from the dam beside the Prince's Highway in Victoria, Australia. He was soaking wet and had the look of fear frozen on his face. The man managed to flag down a passing vehicle. He exclaimed that he had crashed his car into the dam and it had sunk to the bottom of the dark and icy waters. He then added that his three children were still inside the car. Prince's Highway is a major road in Australia that extends from Sydney to Adelaide. It runs via the coast mostly, entering through the states of New South Wales, Victoria, and South Australia. It was the 4th of September 2010 when police were notified of a car that had ran off the Prince's Highway between Winchelsea and Geelong in Victoria, Australia. The car had smashed through a wire fence and then fell into the dark and deep waters of the dam shortly before 8 p.m. Robert Farquharson, who had been driving the car, flagged down a driver and exclaimed that his three sons were still trapped inside the car. He said that he had managed to escape, but he couldn't rescue his sons and his mobile phone was soaking wet, rendering it unusable. Robert asked the driver to take him to the boy's mother, Cindy, in Winchelsea, around 8 kilometres away, to raise the alarm. The three boys trapped inside the car were 9-year-old Jay, 7-year-old Tyler, and 2-year-old Bailey. Cindy, friends, and neighbours arrived at the dam before emergency services. By this point, the sun had already gone down, and it couldn't even be determined where the car had entered the water. Nevertheless, they launched themselves into the icy waters, as anybody else in a similar situation would have done, to try and find the car and rescue the boys. SES and CFS crews would arrive on scene, and they too would attempt to reach the car, but to no avail. At around 2 a.m, police divers would finally recover the lifeless bodies of Jay, Tyler, and Bailey. The recovery led to Cindy going into shock. She would be rushed to the hospital, where she would be sedated and surrounded by family. Investigators would state that the car had bounced like a stone when it hit the water and skimmed around 30 metres along the surface before finally sinking and becoming embedded nose first in the mud at the bottom of the dam. Investigators revealed that when Robert opened the front door to escape, it caused the car to sink almost immediately. They also stated that alcohol or speed did not appear to be factors in the car crash. You can see photographs of the scene at the dam on the Vodacast app. It would be revealed that one of the boys had desperately attempted to save their brothers' lives. When they were recovered from the water, all of their seatbelts had been removed, including Bailey's centre clip on his child's seat. Despite their valiant attempts to escape, the boys had not succeeded and drawn to death inside the trapped car. Inspector Mike Talbot would state, "We don't know for sure, but our belief is that one of the children has released them all from their seatbelts." The Farquharson family were well known within the area for their involvement in sporting clubs. Jay played football for Winchelsea's under-12s, which was a premiership team. He loved being a Boy Scout and had a red belt in karate. Jay would help his neighbours by mowing their lawns for that extra bit of pocket money, and his family joked that he loved to raid his grandfather's chair for any loose change which had fallen down the sides. Out of the three boys, he was the one with the dry sense of humour. He had hoped that one day he would become a fireman or a footballer. He was in the fifth grade at Winchelsea Primary School, while Tyler was in the first grade. Tyler had the same smile as his mother, and he loved hot dogs just as much as he loved his grandmother's veggie soup. Tyler was the joker of the family, always quick to put a smile on everybody's faces. He always pulled pranks on his family, his favourite one of which was to put a plastic dog feces in his grandfather's bed. He also idolised his big brother Jay, and was super close with his mother. Bailey was a member of the Mariac and District playgroup, where he was remembered for his smile, laughter, and his love for having fun. He called the family dog Woofy and the family cat Puss. Their cockatiel was simply referred to by Bailey as My Bird. He loved being around his two big brothers, and they always made sure to let him join in. You can see photographs of the three boys on the Vodacast app. Cindy's uncle, Tilio Gambino, said that there was never a dull moment with the three boys, adding that both parents loved the boys and thought the world of them. As for Robert, he said that he was a good father who lived for his children. Robert and Cindy had separated around a year prior to the tragedy. Cindy lived with the boys in Winchelsea, while Robert lived in Geelong with his mother. On the day that the boys died, Robert had them so that they could celebrate Father's Day together. He'd picked the boys up and was given a set of saucepans and a framed picture of the three boys as a gift. Robert had taken the boys into Geelong for dinner at KFC and then to Kmart to buy a new cricket bat for Jay. After a short visit with some relatives, they headed towards Cindy's home in Winchelsea. It was on this short drive home that tragedy struck. Investigators needed to determine how the crash had occurred. They had briefly spoken with Robert, but they needed to wait for him to come out of hospital to speak to him further. They said that the incident at the dam was being treated as a tragic accident, but they still needed to determine what had gone wrong and asked any witnesses to the crash to please come forward and get in contact with them. The Australian community truly struggled to find the words in the aftermath of the crash. It was the epitome of a nightmare for every single parent on this earth. To lose one child in such a tragedy is unimaginable, but to lose all three, it didn't bear thinking about. Barney Parsons, who had known the family for generations, said, "I'm devastated, absolutely devastated by it all. I haven't been able to think straight." And Chelsea Primary School would pay tribute to the boys during a morning assembly, as the flag flew at half-mast. School leaders described the boys as fun-loving, energetic, and gorgeous. The boys' classmates would all write notes to them, and they all recollected how much they would miss their friends, while a memory wall was set up at the back of their classrooms. School principal Judy Fallon said, "They write what they think about the boys and how much they love and miss them. It's about special times had. Remember when we played that special game together? He helped me when I was feeling sad. He used to share his lunch." The Surf Coast Shire and Department of Human Services would announce that they were offering support for those impacted by the tragic loss. A helpline they also implemented would provide contact details of where to seek further help if needed. A makeshift memorial would appear at the dam where the three boys lost their lives. Flowers, candles, and trinkets dotted the bank of the dam, as there was a steady stream of community members coming to pay their respects to the three boys. One note had been left by a friend of the boys which read, "To Tyler and Jay, our two friends, go Essendon." While another read, "Jay Tyler Bailey, mates forever in our memories. Boom chugga boom, Jay." While the car had been removed by police, the drag marks from where it was pulled from the water still remained on the banks, a raw reminder of the tragedy that had unfolded just days earlier. The motorist who had picked Robert up when he flagged him down for help would make himself known to police. He said that Robert had told him that he had a coughing fit and blacked out before crashing into the dam. He stated, "He kept saying he killed his kids. He ran off the road. He said something about being in a car and then having a coughing fit, woke up in the water." He said that Robert had told him that he couldn't get his children out of the car. Robert's father, Don, would confirm that his son had told him the same thing. He said that for a week before the tragedy, Robert had been in bed with the flu, adding that the hospital thought it could have been a blocked artery. He said to the advertiser, "He's had this coughing fit, and that's all he can remember." Robert would be released from hospital 2 days after the incident, and he would be interviewed for 3 hours by investigators before being released. Investigators revealed that they were still perplexed as to why there were no skid marks from the car at the scene, and they had found that the car's ignition and lights had been switched off when the car was recovered. They announced that they were going to be conducting mechanical tests on the car to check if the steering or brakes had somehow malfunctioned. As it was disclosed that Robert was being interviewed, many of his family members would come to his defence. His father, Don, said, "Their lives have just been taken away and Robbie's life is taken away too," adding that he didn't know how Robert would ever recover from what had happened. Speaking of his son, he said that Jay, Taylor and Bailey were his life and that he doted on them. He said that Robert had told him he had desperately attempted to save his three children by diving down into the dam, but he couldn't reach the car. He revealed that Robert blamed himself for the crash, stating, "He blames himself. Who wouldn't? But he had no say in it whatsoever. He's not drinking and there were no drugs." As a matter of fact, Cindy would come to Robert's defence as well. While she was still in the hospital in shock, her family said that she accepted that the incident was just a tragic accident. Her uncle, Tilio, said that despite the fact the couple were no longer together, Cindy still loved Robert and thought the world of him, and the Gambino family visited Robert in hospital every day since the incident. While Robert had been interviewed once already, investigators said that they were wanting to interview him further. Inspector Talbot said, "I don't know when, it just depends on what information comes to hand, what that tells us." They had taken measurements, daylight photos and laser scans of the scene down by the dam to provide a 3D scan which could hopefully assist in the investigation. Meanwhile, Cindy would be released from the hospital, and she met up with Robert so that they could plan the funeral of their three boys. Essendon Football Club donated three signed Guernseys for their funeral service. The boys were all supporters of the club, and they would be draped over their coffins. Cindy would release a heartbreaking tribute to her three boys in their death notice. It read in part, "The Lord will keep watch over you now and forevermore. The sun will not hurt you by day, nor the moon by night." Robert too would post a tribute which read, "If I could have a lifetime wish that could come true, I would wish all my heart for yesterday to go on forever, so I can spend time with you, your loving dad." Jay, Tyler and Bailey would be laid to rest on the 11th of September, and their funeral was held at St. John the Baptist Church in Winchelsea. Around 120 people packed into the small country church, while another 600 or so sat on plastic chairs outside. Father John Haynes said to the mourners, "Three ordinary little boys in an ordinary town made a huge difference to so many people." He said that Jay, Tyler and Bailey were so full of life and had left clear footprints in the hearts of many. He spoke about the enormous capacity children have for making each day of their life count, stating, "When the life of a child ends prematurely, we are tempted to talk about a life that had scarcely started. But children can pack an awful lot of living into one single day." Family friend Wendy Kennedy would provide a poignant eulogy for the three boys. She described Jay as generous like his father, adding that he always wanted to look after his younger brothers. She smiled as she recalled how he loved to act out moments he had seen in movies, before quipping. It was always the adult jokes he liked, the ones he shouldn't have understood. She spoke of Tyler's love for food and making mud cakes, as well as his penchant for pulling pranks on the family and pulling numerous funny faces, in particular, his cross-eyed face. Speaking of Bailey, she said that while he was only 2 years old, he was old enough to protest anything that he didn't like by stating, "This is quack, Mum." And when he was told that he was being naughty, he would say, "But me just a baby, Mum." At the end of the service, the boy's favourite song emanated from the speakers, "Holy Grail" by Hunters and Collectors. As it played, 12 pallbearers carried the three small caskets from the church. As the caskets were let out, the grief inside the church was audible, as Cindy let out a loud wail. She leaned heavily on her ex-husband Robert. The boys' classmates would form a guard of honour around the casket and release blue and white balloons into the air. Some of the children had worn their Winchelsea football jumpers and their under-12 medals around their necks in honour of Jay. Following the service, Winchelsea Primary School announced that they were going to turn the first sod on the school's garden into a memorial garden for the boys. It would be a place for their friends to come and reflect, think fondly of memories they shared with the brothers. The garden would include a water feature, a memorial stone and a bench for children to sit. While Bailey hadn't been a student at the school yet, he would be included. As the principal said, he was a potential student, and that potential had been taken away. There would be a plaque at the memorial garden, which simply read, "Always in our hearts." Robert would break his public silence with a bereavement notice in the Geelong Advertiser. He thanked Cindy, relatives, friends and the community for all of their love and support. However, just days later, investigators would announce that Robert had taken a polygraph test and had failed. As a note, polygraph tests are inadmissible in court. Investigators would be back on the scene where the boys had drowned for a partial reenactment. A maroon Holden Berliner, the same make and model as Robert's car, was driven by an investigator. He followed the same path that Robert did multiple times under the careful watch of the rest of the investigation team. The media had also congregated to watch the spectacle, including a helicopter, which hovered overhead in a bid to get the best sight. The community really were rallying around the family, including Robert, and even the thought that this tragedy could have been deliberately caused was tough for people to comprehend. Investigators would later reenact the sinking of the car. The dam was not used for the scene, but the same car the boys were driven in was used. By this point in the investigation, the case had been handed over from the Major Collision Investigation Unit to the Homicide Squad, indicating that there was something in Robert's story that wasn't quite adding up. You can learn more about the reenactment on the Vodacast app. In December, around 3 months after the car plummeted into the dam, Robert was arrested and charged with the murder of his three sons. Robert's defence lawyer, Bernie Cummins, would state that Robert was dumbfounded by the charges and would be staunchly defending the charges. Robert was placed in a high-risk facility while awaiting his next court date out of fear that he could be targeted by other inmates who believed that he had killed his three children. According to investigators, they had consulted with medical and road safety experts, who concluded that Robert's version of events was very unlikely at the very best, and doctors who had examined Robert in the hospital raised doubts about his story almost immediately. They deemed it highly unlikely that somebody free of lung disease could black out from a coughing fit. According to mechanical experts, the steering wheel of the car would have had to have been turned significantly to the right for it to have left the road in the direction of the dam. They said that if a driver lost control, the angle would have been much less severe and the car would have missed the dam. All recreations of the tragedy could not figure out how the car veered so dramatically off course and into the dam. All checks of the car also showed that it was in working order, and when it was examined, the lights and ignition had been switched off. Towards the end of the year, Robert applied for bail. He would appear in court where prosecutor Colin Hillman argued against the bail. He told the courtroom that back in June, Robert had allegedly told an unnamed witness that he was going to hurt the children and kill himself before going to jail. He allegedly referred to a dam and driving during the conversation. The prosecutor stated it was important because everybody would remember that he was the last one with the children and his wife would suffer on every Father's Day for the rest of her life. He said that his wife was going to pay big time. During the conversation, Robert had allegedly said he wanted Cindy to pay because she had gotten the best deal during their breakup, including the good car. He was apparently upset that Cindy might be marrying her new partner, and he vowed to not let that happen. Defense lawyer Russell Serra would refute this, referring to her client as a loving and caring father. She said, "This was a terrible accident, no more, no less." He said that it was a circumstantial case based on a reconstruction, and said that his alleged conversation had never been put to Robert during a police interview. Judge Kevin Bell would set the bail for Robert on the condition of a $200,000 surety to be provided by his father. Robert would be released on bail on the 31st of December, and he was ordered to report twice a week to police and to surrender his passport. In approving the bail, the judge said, "The present case has a variety of circumstances which make it exceptional. Cindy was there at court along with other family members who were all standing by Robert. The day that Robert was released, it would have been Bailey's third birthday." For dry January and beyond, there's no better time to try Shirley. They offer craft, great-tasting wines that don't compromise your health and don't come feeling rubbish the next day. Shirley work with a talented team of winemakers to bring amazing, de-alcoholized wines that fit any lifestyle, whether you're wanting to just be healthier or cut down on your alcohol. With Shirley, you can wake up with a clear head and a happy mind. Gone are the days of rubbish sleep and low productivity that often comes after drinking alcohol. You can swap your after-work glass of wine for Shirley or bring a bottle to a friend's house and see the difference. Head on over to highshirley.com. That is HISURELY.com and use the code Morbidology for 20% off your first order. Did you know that in the last year alone, rates of anxiety and depression doubled in the United States? It can often take weeks to get a traditional therapy appointment, and these can be expensive. Well, Cerebral is an online mental health service that offers prescription medication, counseling, and therapy for anxiety, depression, ADHD, insomnia, and more. It's okay to not be okay. Cerebral is one of the few services out there to provide prescription medication online through a licensed provider, and they ship it right to your front door. You can message your care team on Cerebral at any point, and through the app, you essentially have them with you everywhere you go. You can schedule sessions with your counselor or therapist at any given time, and it's totally affordable. In fact, it's a third the price of traditional therapy, and there are options with or without insurance. Morbidology listeners get 65% off their first month of medication management and care counseling at getcerebral.com/morbidology. Click the link in my show notes or go to getcerebral.com/morbidology for 65% off your first month. That's just a total of $30 to get yourself started. Join Cerebral today on their mission to make quality mental health care accessible and affordable for all. Robert wouldn't be back in court until April of the following year, when the case was adjourned until the 14th of August, when a preliminary hearing would be held. During the preliminary hearing later that year, Cindy would testify before Magistrate John Kleestad. She said that she did not believe that Robert had killed their three boys. She said that it was her idea for the boys to spend Father's Day with Robert and described him as a soft father who would not say no to the boys. She said, "I believe with all of my heart that this was just an accident and he would never have hurt a hair on their heads." Speaking of the day of the crash, Cindy said she had given the boys to Robert at around 3 p.m. She described Robert as a little emotional, but said that she expected him to be emotional. It was Father's Day, after all, and they had gone through a breakup. In a police summary tendered to the courts, investigators revealed that an unnamed person, as mentioned earlier, had spoken to them about disturbing things Robert had said. This person said that Robert was upset about his separation with Cindy and over her relationship with her new boyfriend, Stephen Mules. Robert had allegedly said to this person that he would not let the boys live in Stephen's house with Cindy and pay child maintenance. It read in part, "The accused said that he would take away the most important thing to her," and nodded his head towards where his children were standing. This witness said that they thought that Robert wasn't being serious and that the conversation stopped when the three boys approached their father. It had allegedly taken place just 3 months before the boys drowned. While Cindy was standing by Robert, her boyfriend Stephen would state that when they arrived at the dam to search for the boys, he had confronted Robert when he asked him for a cigarette instead of trying to help rescue his children. He recollected how he said to Robert, "These are your kids. How could you worry about smokes at a time like this?" He said he asked Robert why he hadn't tried to get his children out of the car, and he responded, "I don't know." According to Stephen, he said to Robert, "So you wake up in the water, you didn't try to get your kids out, and all you're worried about is a smoke. You're a nut. There's something not right about this. I don't believe you. Get out of my face, or I will kill you." Sheehan Atkinson, the driver who had picked Robert up following the crash, said he believed that Robert was mentally ill, stating, "I didn't think he was the full $2. He said Robert exclaimed that his children were probably dead and that he appeared to be a babbling mess. Sheehan said he felt tremendous guilt over that night. He now felt as though he should have stayed at the scene, asked more questions, and attempted to rescue the boys himself. Rather than take Robert to Cindy's house, he wished he had tried to call police or an ambulance. Details of what Robert said to investigators would be disclosed during the hearing. He had told them, "I went over the overpass and I just started coughing, and then all of a sudden I was in the water and my son screamed out and he opened the door and we nosedived. I tried to get them out and I tried to get out to get help." When he was pressed on the details of the alleged accident, Robert said, "I'm telling the truth. I've got no reason to lie." Dr. Bruce Bartley, The emergency physician who saw Robert said he diagnosed him with cough syncope, which is a condition that can result in a sudden loss of consciousness. When asked how this would affect someone's driving, he said he expected them to go floppy and not be capable of purposeful movement. However, Robert's car would need to take a sharp turn to head towards the dam. Sergeant Jeffrey Exton said that when the car was retrieved from the water, the rear doors were locked and the ignition had been switched off, something he said that was impossible to have been done by accident. He also said that there was no evidence of tire marks to suggest that the driver of the car had applied the brakes, and he believed that the car had entered the water at high speed. He stated, "In my opinion, the Holden Commodore was being steered by the driver right up until the point it sank." He rejected the claims that Robert had blacked out. Constable Ted Harmon, who had spoken to Robert after arriving at the scene, said that he wasn't displaying any emotional distress. He said he didn't appear to be somebody who had just lost his three children in such horrific circumstances. He said, "I have been a member of the police force for 18 years, and I have attended many serious, multiple fatal collisions, and have spoken to surviving family members, friends, and witnesses at the scene. On this night, Robert didn't display any emotional distress during my conversation with him." He also revealed that Robert had complained of chest pain, which caused him to black out, and he didn't mention having a coughing fit to him. The unnamed witness, who allegedly had the conversation with Robert, would be identified as Greg King, and it would be revealed that 11 days after the incident, investigators gave him a tape recorder to covertly record a conversation. Greg would be called to testify, and he held back tears as he described how his closest friend told him that he wanted to kill his children. He said that Greg had been depressed since the breakdown of his marriage, and had spoken of suicide at least twice over the past year, as well as mentioning a dam. He claimed that Robert told him about killing the boys on Father's Day to pay back Cindy. He said that he went to investigators with what Robert had told him 8 days after the incident, stating, "I have to get this off my chest, and for me and my family. I am good friends with Rob and his family, but I have to talk about what happened." During the covert recording, Robert made no admissions, but told Greg he had misinterpreted what he had earlier said, and urged him not to tell anybody about that conversation, stating, "It's going to incriminate me." Following the committal hearing, Robert was ordered to stand trial on the three murder charges, with Magistrate John Kleestad stating that the tire marks left by the car and the alleged anger Robert felt for Cindy could be enough for a jury to be convicted that he had murdered the boys. The one-year anniversary would come on the 4th of September, and Cindy would speak of her anguish. She said in a memoriam notice in the Geelong Advertiser, "My precious little angels, I cannot believe it has been 1 year since I held you in my arms, yet it feels so long ago. The pain is just so raw, it consumes me, every moment of every day. My whole being will never be the same, so incomplete. To smile just seems so hard now, happiness so distant, so far. I miss you all so much, my precious angels, in God's arms until we meet again. My love now and forevermore, Mummy." Robert would be ordered to stand trial in June of 2007, and he would plead not guilty to the charges. However, shortly before the trial was scheduled to begin, it was pushed back and was ready to start in August. A jury consisting of 10 men and 5 women were told to put aside any prejudice and sympathy and not be distracted by any media attention. During opening statements, prosecutor Jeremy Rapke said that Robert had been suffering from depression after the breakdown of his marriage. He spoke about the conversation Robert allegedly had with Greg, stating, "I get the shit car and she gets to drive around in the good car. She's going to pay big time for this. She's not going to do that to me and get away with it." When he was asked by Greg what he was going to do, he allegedly replied, "Take away the most important thing for her." Prosecutor Rapke said, "The accused deliberately drove his car into that dam with the intention of killing his children." He detailed how the car had veered sharply to the right, crossing onto the wrong side of the road before hitting a wire fence, clipping a tree and ending up in the water. He said that when Robert flagged down Shane, he immediately said to him, "I just killed the kids. What have I done? Give me a lift back to Winch. I've got to tell Cindy I've just killed the kids." Shane and his passenger offered to dive into the dam, but Robert refused, telling them to drive him to Cindy's house. It would be revealed during the trial that the car had been found nose down in 7.4 metres of water, with Jay partway out the open driver's side door. He said that three separate steering movements were required for the car to have taken the course that it did. Defence lawyer Peter Morrissey said to the courtroom that his client had a severe coughing fit that led him to black out momentarily. He claimed that he woke up to find his car in the dam and water up to his chest. He claimed that he had attempted to dive back into the water to save his children. He said he would be challenging the accuracy of Greg's statements, stating, "You will appreciate the difference between a separated father saying the odd angry word on the one hand and a vengeful man threatening to drown his own children on the other." Shane would be the first witness to testify during the controversial trial. He said that he and his passenger, Tony McClelland, offered to jump into the dam to try and rescue the children, but Robert refused and asked them for a cigarette. He told the courtroom, he said he wanted to go back to his missus' house so he could tell her he killed his kids. He said that he refused to call an ambulance and even pushed the mobile phone that he had offered him away, telling him that it was already too late. With a tinge of regret in his voice, Shane said, "I knew I shouldn't have left there without ringing the ambulance. I'd done the stupidest thing of my life." The passenger Tony would tell the courtroom that when Robert told Cindy what had happened, she asked why he didn't stay with the children, and he responded, "They've already died." Cindy and Robert argued, and Cindy attempted to slap Robert, understandably. Shane and Tony went to the police station and then went back to the dam. By now, there was already a congregation of people, including Cindy and Robert, at the scene. Cindy was screaming at the edge of the dam. Firefighter James Cromer would state, she was screaming out she couldn't bury her children. He said that onlookers were trying to rescue the boys while Robert smoked a cigarette. Paramedic David Watson had been in the ambulance as it transported Robert to the hospital. He said that he made the comments, "Did I do the right thing? How can I live with myself after all of this has happened?" He said that Robert explained to him how he had a coughing fit and somehow ended up in the dam. He said, "My older son opened the car door, causing the car to fill up with water and sink." Sergeant Jeffrey Exton of the Major Collisions Investigation Unit described the moment that they recovered the car from the bottom of the dam. He said that Tyler and Bailey were found in the back seats, while Jay was found lying across the two front seats. Jay's body had been pushed back into the car after he was found protruding from the driver's door by a police diver. None of the children were wearing their seatbelts or their child restraints. He detailed how the ignition was turned off and in the lock position, the headlights and fan were switched off, and the rear door's child locks were on. Cindy would take to the witness stand to speak about the last day that she saw her sons. She had dropped the boys off with Robert, telling the courtroom that she had given them a cuddle, and Bailey told her that he loved her. Never in a million years did she realise it was the last time she would get to see her boys. She said she was expecting them home at around 7:30 p.m., but was instead greeted by a hysterical Robert, soaking wet. He said to her, "The kids are in the car and they're in the water." She sped to the dam, where she started to look for where the car could have entered the water, but it was pitch black. Her partner Stephen jumped into the water to try and locate the children, as she tried calling 000. She testified, "I couldn't because I was so hysterical. I couldn't push the numbers properly." Cindy went on to speak about her relationship with Robert and their breakup, describing him as pretty devastated by it. She said he didn't react well when she entered a new relationship with Stephen and would complain about his role in the lives of their children, as well as the fact that they were mixing with his children. She said, "He felt that he may be pushed out as the father of his children, and Stephen stepped in, but I always assured him that would never be the case. She said that the couple had problems before they split up, telling the courtroom, "I found it throughout my marriage, very hard to give my heart to my husband. You can love someone, but you can also be in love with someone, and I found it hard to be in love with Rob." She explained how she had put the children first during their breakup, and commented that Jay needed counselling to deal with his anger and upset of his parents breaking up. She said while Robert loved his children, he did express resentment about paying maintenance. Listening to true crime podcasts can sometimes make us realise just how prevalent crime can be within our community. Well, today's episode is sponsored by Deep Sentinel, the best home security system company. Deep Sentinel, real human guards watch your cameras in real time to help prevent home intrusion, package theft, auto tampering, and more. When the smart camera detects movement, it will stream within seconds to detect potential threats at your home. If there is a threat, the human guard watching can engage with potential criminals with the two-way audio system and can contact police within just seconds. Deep Sentinel boasts the fastest response times among home security companies. Your home is your castle, and it's time you started to protect it in the most advanced way possible. Head on over to deepsentinel.com. That is deepsentinel.com to learn more. Is there something interfering with your happiness, or are you apprehensive about reaching out for help? BetterHelp is here to help you and their today's sponsor of Morbidology. BetterHelp is not self-help, it's professional counseling available to you online or over the phone. BetterHelp is more affordable and accessible than traditional offline counseling, and they offer financial aid. Sadly, sometimes traditional offline counseling is not locally available for everybody, but BetterHelp is available for clients worldwide. They have licensed professional counselors specializing in a broad variety of areas, including depression, sleeping, self-esteem, grief, and much more. Everything you share with your counselor is confidential and they are matched to your specific needs. I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting our sponsor at betterhelp.com/morbidology. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp.com/morbidology. Stephen, who had desperately attempted to save the boys' lives, would testify next. He said that they had rushed down to the dam, and while here, he asked Robert what had happened. He replied that he had blacked out, and Stephen asked if he had been drinking, to which Robert said that he had not. Stephen took his boots off and jumped into the water, where he thought the car may have entered. He wasn't exactly sure where, because apparently Robert couldn't remember. He said, "The water was ice cold. It took my breath away. The longest I stayed in at any one time was 5 or 6 minutes. The pathologist who had conducted the autopsies, Dr. Michael Burke, would testify that all three boys had drowned in the car. He said that Jay, who had been sitting in the front, had bruises and abrasions to his face, as well as bruising to the soft tissue along the spine on his neck. He said that these injuries were consistent with whiplash. Some testimony would be presented into Robert's alleged cough. Susan Bateson, who was Robert's boss at Cumberland Resort, said that 2 days before the boys were killed, she observed that Robert had a dry, grabbing cough, which appeared to take his breath away. She said that she was worried that he was having a stroke. His face went bright red and she told him to sit down for a minute and take a breather. She also said that back in August he went home with flu-like symptoms and was off work for 10 days. Robert's doctor, Dr. Ian McDonald, would tell the courtroom that in October of 2004, he had prescribed Robert antidepressants after he described having emotional ups and downs, irritability, and finding it difficult to cope with his children. After seeing him again in November of 2004, he diagnosed him as suffering depressive illness and referred him to a psychologist. Bruce Bartley, the deputy consultant at the hospital where Robert was transported to after the crash, said that he showed signs of being unconscious, but he said that there was no proof to show that he had been unconscious because of a coughing fit, but also said that there was no proof to show that this wasn't the cause. He said, "There will never be a definite diagnosis until somebody has witnessed it." He said he appeared to be in good health, but had been treated in previous weeks for a chest infection and had been suffering from a dry cough. He said that at no stage did he see Robert cough in the hours after the crash. He also testified that Robert told him he was on antidepressants, but had not taken his regular dose that morning. Robert had been prescribed Zoloft before being prescribed Avanza, which has more sedative qualities. He had also been prescribed the sleeping tablet, Stilnox, and Valium at different times in the year before the crash. His psychologist, Dr. Peter Popko, would testify that following the crash, Robert had expressed fear that the investigation would push him over the edge. Beforehand, Robert had shown tremendous progress and was even considering stopping the sessions. The court would hear the very first interview with Robert. It had been taken on a tape recorder while still in the hospital. He told the investigator, "I can't remember nothing. I just coughed and all that happened. There was nothing there, and then all of a sudden, I sort of woke up on water, and the oldest son opened the door, and I sort of just leaned across and shut it, and I tried to unbuckle them because they were screaming. It's just a nightmare." He claimed that he closed Jay's door because he thought he could get out and save them all. He also claimed he attempted to dive down and save his children, but to no avail. Robert was read his rights, and several times throughout the interview, Robert asked what he was facing, stating, "I have never been in trouble before, so what's the likely scenario for me? As well as, what's the outcome for me? Well, I mean, mate, what sort of thing's going to happen to me now? You don't know till you do the investigation." According to Robert, he was happy on Father's Day. Jay had told him that he had another present for him at home and thought that he was going to love it. Further tape recordings from a later interview would be played out, and Robert was asked why he had closed Jay's door. He replied, "'Cause water was getting in." He was asked what he did next, and he responded, "'We started filling up. I managed just to get mine out, thinking, like I said, we were on a ledge and it was going down. Before that, it was going down and I got out and I was trying to get around the other side and trying to get to them and I couldn't. And so I thought, well, I didn't know how deep we were in the water. I had no idea and I didn't know how far out we were or where we were. I swam to the road and walked back to the road and tried to wave people down to stop and help me." Greg King, who had testified during the committal hearing, would testify once again. He detailed the ominous conversation that he had with his friend Robert. It had taken place outside a fish and chip shop when they saw Cindy and the boys. He told the jury after Robert threatened to take away the most important thing, he asked what he meant. Greg stated, "He then just stared at me in the eyes and said, 'Kill them.' I said, 'Bullshit, it's your own flesh and blood, Robbie.' And he said, 'So, I hate them.'" He claimed Robert told him he would pick Father's Day and that would involve an accident in a dam where he survived and the children didn't. Then the covert recording that Greg had captured was played out, which took place after the incident at the dam. In the recording, Robert asserted that Greg had misinterpreted what he meant, stating, "I would never, ever do anything like that. I have got to live with this for the rest of my life." During the conversation, Robert also stated that Cindy backed him up 150% and knew that he would never do anything to harm the boys. He also told Greg what to say if investigators spoke with him and essentially coached him into saying what a good father he was. After the boys' death, Greg told the courtroom that he'd been so traumatized that he needed antidepressants and sleeping tablets. Greg's wife would also testify. Greg had claimed that he told his wife of the ominous conversation he had with Robert, but on the witness stand, she said she couldn't recollect this conversation. At the time, she had been making dinner for their children. Defence Morrissey asked, It's not possible that you would remember the trivial detail of a trip to the fish shop, but forget the major one of a plan to murder his own three beautiful children. Do you agree with me or not? She replied, I was busy at the time, and all I wanted to do was get these chops and the kids fed. I don't know if he discussed it in detail with me, because I don't remember. The focus of the trial would then shift back to the alleged coughing fit, with Matthew Naughton, a respiratory expert, testifying that a cough syncope was a rare condition and he had never seen it in his 25 years as a medical practitioner. Apparently, the diagnosis had come simply because they couldn't find another explanation for Robert's alleged blackout. Professor Naughton said that a cough syncope was confined almost exclusively to those who had heart and lung conditions, which Robert did not. Another neurologist would corroborate this, stating he had only ever diagnosed 6 instances of cough syncope, all of which had pre-existing medical conditions. The court would then hear from Sergeant Glenn Urquhart, who testified that Robert's car had been steered as it left the road and crashed into the dam. He said that there had been 3 distinct steering inputs to the car before it went into the water, killing the 3 boys. He said that there was no physical evidence on the road to show that the car was out of control. He said that there was no evidence that Robert had attempted to put his foot on the brakes. Defence Morrissey would try to attack this evidence, calling the reconstruction incomplete and incompetent. The defence would then call on Dr. Chris Steinford, who backed up the claims of the coughing fit. He said that given Robert's medical history, it was likely that he had suffered a cough syncope at the time of the crash. He said he had seen 15 cases of the condition, which he described as a sudden loss of consciousness following a violent coughing fit. After all of the evidence was presented, it would be time for closing arguments. Prosecutor Rapke said to the jury that the 3 boys could have survived for a period in an air pocket as their father swam to safety. He said it would be artificial and potentially misleading to look at the tragic case without considering Robert's breakup with Cindy, his professed love for his children, his financial position, and his long-term depressive illness. He said that these factors had a bearing on the likelihood that Robert was a murderer instead of an unlucky man. He said to the jury that Robert was guilty of murder beyond a reasonable doubt, adding that the case was like a jigsaw where the whole picture could only emerge when all of the pieces were looked at. He also reminded the jury that Robert had given vague details about how he allegedly tried to save his sons. He said, "It's not what you would expect a father desperately trying to save his children would do." Defence Morrissey would say to the jury in his closing arguments that Robert was a non-violent father who loved his children, not an Iceman triple killer. He said that the prosecution's case against Robert was a disaster, stating that there was no evidence to support the theory and no evidence to show sudden acceleration or braking. He even suggested that Jay could have affected the steering while trying to help his father. He said that Robert was a chubby smoker with a respiratory ailment at the time. As he said, a candidate for cough syncope. The jury would deliberate for 3 days before returning with a verdict. They found Robert Farquharson guilty of the murders of Jay, Tyler, and Bailey. As the verdict was read aloud, Cindy broke down and needed to be taken away from the courtroom. Her mother, Beverly, fainted. Just the day before the verdict was handed down, Robert had organised red tulips to be sent to his sons' graves in memory of Jay's birthday. The card simply read, "Dear Jay, thinking of you on your birthday. Love you, Dad." The sentencing phase would follow, and the prosecution would be seeking the maximum sentence of life in prison. He said that the boys had died in a horrific way at such a tender age, stating, "But none were so young as to be immune from fear, shock, feelings of abandonment, and plain terror in the last moments of their lives." Defence Morrissey said that his client maintained his innocence. The family would all come to Robert's defence. His sister, Carmen Ross, said that on his niece's 21st birthday, he cried, knowing that his sons would never reach that milestone. She said she was proud to be the boys' godmother, and said that they were all such polite children and well brought up. She said, "I have already lost my nephews. I am not losing their father." Robert would ultimately be sentenced to life in prison, without parole. In handing down the sentence, Judge Philip Cummins said, "You wiped out your entire family in one act. Only two parents remained. You, because you always intended to save yourself, and their mother, because you intended her to live a life of suffering." Robert immediately appealed his sentence, and his former wife, Cindy, would stand by him. In an interview, she said she felt moments of anger, but never blame. However, in April of 2009, it was announced that Cindy was suing Robert. She was seeking compensation for pain and suffering. She said that her son's deaths had left her with nervous shock, post-traumatic stress disorder, anxiety, depression, pain and suffering. Robert would be ordered to pay her $225,000. Shortly thereafter, Robert's defense lawyer, Peter Morrissey, would suggest that police delayed laying an assault charge against their star witness, Greg King, until after Robert was convicted. He suggested that the jury may have had a different view of Greg if they knew that he was facing assault charges stemming from a bar fight. He even suggested that Greg lied to get a more lenient sentence further down the line. Greg had been put on a 12-month good behavior bond and fined $750 for punching a man in the stomach during a bar fight back on Christmas Eve of 2005. He would go to the Victoria Supreme Court of Appeal in a bid to have Robert's conviction overturned. He stated, "Greg is a violent drunken bully who hunted with a pack." Meanwhile, Cindy would do an interview in which she said that Robert was refusing to see her in prison. She revealed that she had become addicted to analgesics and had attempted suicide. She said that Robert had refused to see her to explain what had happened to the boys, telling her he couldn't because it was too traumatic. She stated, "Nobody's been more traumatized than me, but it hasn't stopped me being compassionate or believing in Rob's innocence, and it doesn't make sense that he wouldn't want to see the only other person on earth who understands his heartache." In December, Robert's conviction was quashed, with the Victoria Court of Appeal ruling that there was a miscarriage of justice. He was ordered to stand trial on the same charges. Robert would be released from prison on bail under a $200,000 surety. The new trial began in May of 2010, and it was similar to the first trial, but this time there would also be a new eyewitness. Dawn Waite would testify that she had been driving on the Prince's Highway that night when she saw Robert's car swerve or veer to the right and then left several times with no apparent reason. He was driving around half of the speed limit. She told the courtroom she had attempted to get Robert's attention, but he was preoccupied and was looking to the right, potentially in the wing mirror. She said that she saw the three children in the car before she overtook it, and then when glancing back, she saw the car turn right off the highway in the direction of the dam. She hadn't realised that it was heading towards the dam until the following day when she saw the news. Dawn was asked by prosecutor Andrew Tinney whether the driver appeared to be coughing, to which she replied, "No, definitely not." She said that she wanted the court to forgive her for not coming forward with evidence sooner. She said that she had cancer, which had taken four doctors and several years to diagnose, and that she couldn't come forward because she physically and emotionally could not handle it. She also said that she had been with her 16-year-old daughter in the car and didn't want to stress her out, as she had just been uprooted from New Zealand, lost three grandparents, and had suffered the death of a close friend. Cindy would testify once again, but this time her attitude to Robert had done a 180. She said she hated Robert for what he had done and wanted him to be convicted of murder. Under cross-examination by defence Morrissey, she admitted that she had supported Robert for 2 years after the death of their sons, but now she blamed him. She revealed her psychiatrist believed that her initial denial was damaging her ability to deal with multiple disorders, including depression and anxiety. She said that the only contact she had with Robert for 3 years was a pathetic letter that was written through his defence lawyer, despite the fact she had attempted numerous times to set up a meeting in prison. She said, "He promised to see me after Jay's birthday on the 4th of October, 2 years ago, and it never happened." She revealed that she had kept all of the boys' belongings, keeping them in a shed, but she couldn't bring herself to look at the items because it was too traumatic. It was revealed during the trial that Robert's name had been scratched from the boys' gravestones, and Defence Morrissey would question whether Cindy was responsible. She replied, "Oh, you disgust me. That's my children's resting place. That's my children's headstone." She said she had paid for the headstone and was still owed money from Robert for it. Robert would testify on his own behalf where he was questioned as to why the ignition was turned off. He said that he didn't know and even suggested that one of his sons could have turned off the ignition. Prosecutor Tinney asked if he was seriously suggesting that his children, in the moments or however long it was before they died, would have any reason to turn off the ignition. He replied, "Well, I can't answer it. I am trying to answer it the best way I can." It was revealed that Robert was going to have to pay increased child support payments shortly before the boys' deaths, with Prosecutor Tinney asking, "Well, you didn't ever end up paying the increased amount, did you? Because your children all died, and once they were dead, there was no requirement for you to pay child support at all, was there?" Robert admitted that he did say to Greg that he wanted to pay back Cindy big time, but said that the comment was misunderstood. Defence Morrissey would claim during trial that the murder case had one flaw, and that was that Robert had invited a friend to join them on their Father's Day trip. This friend, however, couldn't come, but according to the defence, this was evidence that the deaths were not premeditated murder and had not been planned at all. The jury would ultimately find Robert Farquharson guilty of the murder of his three children once again. He would be sentenced once more to life in prison. Cindy spoke to the media outside of court.
"It's never going to be enough. It's a life sentence for me. It should be a life sentence for him."
Father's Day is a day for families to get together and for children to show their love for their father. That afternoon had started out like a regular Father's Day, the sharing of presents and food at a fast food restaurant. But by that night, however, three innocent children would be dead, and the notion that a father would do anything in their power to protect their children was completely shattered. In Australia, an average of 25 children each year are murdered by a parent, with fathers or stepfathers being responsible for 60% of these murders. However, in almost all of these incidents, there is a clear history of domestic violence. By all accounts, Robert Farquharson had been a doting father before killing his three children, and that's why this case completely gripped Australia, and even the rest of the world. Well, besties, that is it for this episode of Morbidology. As always, thank you so much for listening. I'd like to say a big massive thank you to my amazing new Patreon supporters, Vigard, Cora, and A. Baker. If you'd like to support the show, please feel free to check Morbidology out on Patreon. The link is in the show notes, or you can just search on the app or website. In exchange for your support, I send out handwritten thank you notes, as well as merch. I also upload ad-free and early release episodes and bonus episodes of Morbidology Plus that aren't on the regular platforms. There's also bonus content up on there, including audio and case files. Morbidology also has a private Facebook group that I'd love for you all to join. I'd love to chat with my listeners about the episodes, their thoughts on the episodes, as well as chat about potential cases you'd like to hear on the show. Just search for Morbidology on Facebook and it should come up. Remember to check us out at morbidology.com for more information about this episode and to read our true crime articles. Until next time, I hope you all have an amazing holiday period with your loved ones. Take care of yourselves, stay safe, and have an amazing week.